Good morning. Welcome back into Coach to Coach Middle Tennessee Style. We are brought to you, of course, by Farm Bureau Health Plans. They always remind you that, hey, plan on us. Coach Dave McGinnis still in town.
Yes, sir.
Getting ready to leave at some point. Mandatory that Texans have to go back, have to take a pilgrimage back there at least every 2 weeks out of the year, isn't it?
You've got to cross the state line if you live out of state at least twice a year. Absolutely. Gotcha. That's a rule.
Can you fly over? Do you have to drive over?
No, you have to touch down. You have to put your feet on the ground.
How you been, by the way?
Been great. Everything's been good. Just been, you know, wrapping up there with the Titans. And well, I know we'll get into this and talk about this, but then, you know, quite a bit of wrap up to do, and going to make a few trips, some business trips before we start the season. So looking forward to it.
Great. I assume that they're bringing you back for one more year at least of Titans Radio.
Well, they haven't said they're not, so we'll assume they are.
Not quite as well. I don't know if I want to use the word cutthroat or not. That's not the right word. But Dave, anybody that's coached, I think there may be a coach or two out there that has not gone in. Your key didn't work when you got into the office. Most of us have been fired. Some just once, if you're lucky. But radio business is a little bit calmer from that standpoint, I would say, right?
Well, I mean, I had no idea how the radio business was until, you know, like 5 years ago when Mike Keith asked me to come back here and do this. But what I found, Doug, is just like in coaching, I mean, this was a great opportunity for me here with the Titans. I'm absolutely loving it. But there's a lot of great opportunities out there. It's amazing, especially nowadays.
All right, let's kind of get into a little bit of talk. We're going to kind of flip it up just a little bit today. As you know, if you've listened to this show, it's Coach to Coach. Two coaches talking about, well, what goes on in, from a coach's perspective. Certainly we're fans also, but much more from the coaching end of it. Most coaches I know that have been in it a while, when they get out, they kind of look at games and look at what's going on from a coach's viewpoint. I know Dave McGinnis does from talking with him, because he spent so many years coaching. Dave, we talk pro and we talk college on this show. Not always 50-50, but try to get in what's going on both of those areas, which is the football part of it in the United States. Dave, let's kind of flip it up a little bit. We normally start with the pros. Let's start with college. Okay. Just come out this past week, something that has been in discussions all over the place. Didn't know exactly where the college football playoff committee was going to go, but it really looks like, I think, pretty much a done deal now. The details are in the final part of it, but 12-team playoff going to be here. Again, I always try to emphasize this when I talk to people about this. The earliest that this can happen will be after the 2023 season. So we're 2 years at least down the road. It could be after the 2025, but most likely the 2023. So we're 2 years away, but this is a big step. It's kind of like you watch any of the sports leagues, pro leagues, football, basketball, all of those, certainly college football. Normally, they move in kind of incremental steps. You go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. This is a pretty good jump. College football playoff going from 4 all the way up to 12. So obviously, you skip the 6-team scenario, the 8-team scenario, even the 10-team scenario, and that's pretty. That's really pretty amazing in itself. But let's just kind of talk about what this 12-team playoff is going to bring. I asked Dave to do this. Let's talk about the winners here and the losers here. Everybody talks about what's going to happen. We got a pretty good idea of what's going to happen, you know. But let's just kind of talk about the winners and losers here. And let's start with the winners. What does a 12-team playoff bring that will be better than a 4-team playoff? And Dave, the first thing I would say is the big winner here is going to be the fans.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the interest level in this is going to be huge. And along with that, of course, you know, ESPN has the rights to all of this. Is ESPN going to be willing to renegotiate this? Because this is going to be big television numbers. I mean, we all know that, because, you know, there were 42 bowl games before. The bowl games It was a lot different than when you and I were coaching in college and going to bowl games. The emphasis on bowl games has changed quite a bit. This is going to be renewed interest, especially on campuses, because these first games are going to be on campus games, you know, in December. And I mean, this is going to be big. It really is. And I think, you know, the fans are going to be huge winners. The next group I think is going to be the biggest winners, Doug, just thinking about it, as you and I talked about, is the group of five. You know, this group of five has been trying to get in for a long time. I think the group of five are huge winners in this. And, you know, the AAC, you know, Conference USA, the MAC, the Mountain West, the Sun Belt. I mean, they got what they wanted. I mean, and this is going to make a difference.
Let's talk about that just a little bit. Now, remember, the format could change, folks, on this over 2 years. This is the format that's in place right now. You know, the 12 teams is almost certainly set. Again, we'll have to have a vote on this. But with the people of the college football playoff that were on this committee, they are the power people in college football. So you can pretty much bet they're going to get this thing pushed through. I'm sure they talked to a lot of people on it, but the 12 teams are going to be now the exact format will still be under some type of discussion. But as Coach Mack just mentioned there, the thing is that what they're looking at right now is they're going to take six of the 12 will be conference champions. All right. They will be the first six seeded brought in. Now notice that the wording on that is conference champions. Right. It doesn't say power five conferences. So that brings in what Coach Mack was just talking about. All the non-power five, the group of five group, but really anybody who's playing football could get in if you're playing in a conference on the conference championship end of. That's first six. Now you still have six remaining. So that means there will be six at large berths. So the runner up in the Southeastern Conference or the Big Ten or whatever. And all this will come from the final college football playoff seeding, all right, the final poll. So forget about the AP, forget about the coaches poll. On this deal, remember, at the end of it, they start later on this poll, college football playoff poll, ranking them. But the final ranking after the championship game, it will be the six conference champions, and then the next six will be the highest seeded teams. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, there could be, let's say that a three loss team gets into the Southeastern Conference championship in Atlanta and wins. Well, they're the conference champion, so they're gonna have an opportunity to get in. That means that probably they're not going to be in the top 12. So the bottom line is they're going to take six conference champs, and then the next six has to come from the highest seeded teams on that. Dave, I think a good format at it. One thing that I just want to go back on with everybody, we've had college football since technically, depending on how you look at it, 1869. We've had 150 years of it.
Right.
I remind people the NFL's only had 100 years of it. So we had 50 years of college football before we had the NFL. But it took until 1998, 24 years ago coming up this year, before we really had any type of a definite one versus two. That's when the BCS came in. So in that 22-year period of time, we went from having bowl matchups decide who the national championship was or sports writers decide who the championship was till actually being able to play a game on the field. Then, of course, we went to the playoffs, the 14 playoffs. Now we're going to the 12-team playoffs. I say all that to say this is something that's happened in football terminology pretty darn quickly. Last 22, 23, 24 years, we've had all this happen where we went from zero playoffs – one versus two matchups to now we're going into a 12-team playoff. Pretty darn sharp.
Yeah, absolutely, Coach. And I mean, you explained that very well for our listeners. And you know what I did when you and I talked about, you know, these topics, and I think this is a very, very interesting topic for everybody. I kind of went back and looked at what last year would have looked like just bracket wise with as you talk about those final rankings. If you looked at it, Memphis, number 12 Memphis would have been at number five, Georgia. Then the winner would have played number four, Oklahoma. Number 11, Utah would have been at number six, Oregon. The winner would have played number three, Clemson. Number 10, Penn State. At number 7, Baylor. They would have played number 2, Ohio State, the winner. And then number 9, Florida. At number 8, Wisconsin. And the winner would have played number 1, LSU. So just think about that a minute. Think about that, you know, just going back, looking at this thing as how it would have been set up, you know, if it was a couple of years ago. So the permutations and the myriad of games that you could get, and just the interest that you're going to get, and especially with these first games being played on campuses, that's a huge boost. That's a huge boost for those teams in December. That's just more money for those athletic departments.
All right. Fans are going to be the winners. Let me tell you who else is going to be the winners. Another area that the fans are going to be the winners. With this now, you're likely going to see stronger non-conference schedules among the big schools, because now you can get in with 2 losses. Before, you've kind of played your conference schedule, and most teams, not all, but most teams have played some non-conference teams that, quite frankly, fans aren't all that interested in. Most of that can go away now, because now you can get in with 2, you can get in with 3, you can get in if you're a conference champion. So there's a lot of ways to look at it. Another one, as I see it, Dave, this comes from a coach's perspective. Now there's going to be 12 coaches. You get into the playoffs, just like if you get into the NFL playoffs or any type of playoffs, NBA, Major League Baseball. You know, if your coaching job security is pretty good if you get into the playoffs now, right? So this will give another 6 or 8 coaches a little bit more security on that. I think that's big. And then, as we mentioned, the other part of it, those non-Power 5 conferences. So those are some of the winners in this. Anybody else you can just think of off the top of your head?
Yeah, I got one more, Coach, thinking about it. I'll tell you who's the winners, the Pac-12, because the Pac-12's been left out of this for a long time. And out there on that left coast, you know, there's some teams that used to be pretty important in college football. They've really been left out of this. And so I think the Pac-12 benefits from this, because now they've got a chance to get into the tournament, as you say.
Kind of interesting. A lot of people want to know where the Southeastern Conference and Greg Sankey were going to come down. He was one of the big proponents of this, and that surprised a few people, except from this standpoint. If you went to just an 8-team playoff, all right, you were going to have this. There were a couple of things that really tied into this, folks, and one of them was this. No matter how it was set up, you had to give all of the Power 5 schools a pretty good, definite opportunity to get in, right. And they would get in. Now, technically, you know, they're not taking the conference champions, but you can bet that probably the 5 champions or the 5 best teams, let me put it that way, in the Power 5 conferences are going to be there. The reason Southeastern Conference was for it, if you go off of last year, and last year's last year, but if you went off that final poll last year, the Southeastern Conference would have had 4 of the 12 teams into the playoffs. So it helps the stronger conferences. It helps the conferences that aren't quite as strong. So those are big pluses from that standpoint. Now, Dave, there's always some give and take on this. Let's talk a little bit about from the loser's perspective. In no particular order, I would say the number 1 loser is going to be bowl games, because obviously if you go to 12 teams instead of 4, you're going to have some bowl games that you're going to lose. I've read several different articles about this. Now, this is pretty much people who follow this as thoughts. We don't know. They estimate somewhere between 4 and 10 bowl games will go away when this happens. And again, I'll remind folks, we're talking at least 2 years in the future before this happens.
Yeah, you know, and you say bowl games, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, Coach. And I'm going to expand that a little bit more. I tell you, a loser in this, you know, just from perspective, is the Rose Bowl, because the Rose Bowl has always had that January 1st date. That's been set in stone for the Rose Bowl forever and ever and ever. If once this goes into being in 2 years, they won't get that January 1st date anymore. So just the Rose Bowl, which, you know, they call the granddaddy of them all, has always had that January 1st date. That's not going to be guaranteed to them anymore. And so, to me, that's a big difference.
Big point. Big point on that. Another loser in this possibly could be from a regular season perspective, just on exactly what we're going to see in the regular season. But a lot will be talked about on this, and some of the things will be brought up. There is a possibility. There's a possibility that a team could play 17 games. All right. Yes. That's the 12 conference games or 12 regular season games. This leaves the championship games in place, which was big for the Southeastern Conference in particular. So that's the 13th game. If you get a bye, you're okay. You know, you're only going to have to play 16 games. But if you don't, you're going to have to play 17 if you get to that final game. I think that's a minor trade-off. Every time I hear that brought up, do you know a single I'm not talking about pros here now. You know a single college football player that doesn't want to play as many games as they possibly can?
No, no, and that's a good point. And you say it's a possibility. It's a mathematical possibility that you play 17. But for a team that's lower in these brackets to be able to go through – now, these are games are one and done. These games are one and done. So to be able to win that many games in a row, especially if you are a lower seed, I would think the mathematical probability and plus just the football strength possibility of that is very, very low, Doug, in my opinion.
All right. Take a little break here. Come back. Got to get into quite a few pro things. We're going to talk a little bit more about name, image, likeness. Just how expansive can name, image, likeness, can it become? Or will it become? We'll discuss that with Coach McGinnis when we come back. Talking about that playoffs, we're a little bit of ways away from that. Let me tell you what you're not very far away from. You're not very far away from a Stroud's barbecue store. You're just a pooch punt away, dare I say, from a Stroud's barbecue store. Outstanding barbecue, that goes along with it. I, in particular, like, as you know, listen to me do these every week, I like the banana pudding. Now, maybe that's just a sweet tooth in me. Don't know. Bottom line is this. There's one near you. Great barbecue, drive through, go in and sit down, order it. They'll have it delivered to you. Wings every weekend, right on Saturdays. Give them a call. Stop by and see them. You're just a pooch punt away from a Stroud store. Coach to coach, we're here every Saturday, 7 o'clock, right here on 104.5 The Zone. And just like our sponsor, Farm Bureau Health Plans, you can plan on us. Coach Dave McGinnis, Doug Matthews with you. And we're talking, well, a little pro, a little college. Dave, Titans wrapped up minicamp, what, Thursday?
Wrapped it up Thursday, Coach. And this will be this was the mandatory minicamp, you know, during the OTAs. You have 10 OTA practices that are voluntary. Then you have a mandatory mini camp that is 3 days. You know, and they can be in the building a little bit longer. They can be on the field a little bit longer. Still restrictions as far as to what you can do on the field. But everybody was there. The first thing I will report for this is that, you know, everybody was present. Everybody now, and not everybody was on the field because you still have some players and some new players and some significant players still, you know, going through off-season rehab with injuries. But everybody else that was capable was out there on the field and practicing. Got to see firsthand. Everybody got to take a look at Janoris Jenkins, the new corner, that they signed. I'm very familiar with Jack Rabbit, drafted him at the Rams. We drafted him out of North Alabama. He was still out there, looked as quick as ever, you know, and making plays. Danico Autry, you know, the signee from Indianapolis was out there. So got a chance to look at, at least what the team will look like a little bit more than we were seeing during the early part of the OTAs. And of course now Coach Vrabel did 2 days with the vets on the field. The third day was all classroom stuff with the vets and the rookies together. And then the vets, you know, left Thursday. The rookies will still be there for a week, some maybe a little longer than a week after, you know, it'd be next week and then the week after. And then everybody's out of there until training camp starts the 27th of July. And so the 24th, everybody will be back. So this is the time in the National Football League after the mandatory minicamp where everybody, coaches and players, and support staff kind of catch your breath a little bit, getting ready for the season.
Jackrabbit, is that a name you gave him, or is that what he's called?
Coach, he's Jackrabbit from birth. He comes from the Muck. You know the Muck down there in Florida? The Muck is that area down there in Florida where there's been about 15 NFL players come out of. It's sugarcane fields down there. They call the Muck, and they burn them off every year. And then the kids, when they're little, when they burn those sugarcane fields off, it's full of jackrabbits. And they all take off and try to catch those rabbits to eat them. And Jackrabbit could catch more than anybody else. So he is Jackrabbit. He does not answer to Janoris. He answers to Jackrabbit.
I bet you there were some Jackrabbits around Snyder, Texas, my guess is.
Plenty of them. There weren't any cane fields, but there were plenty of jackrabbits. I've seen jackrabbits my whole life in my backyard.
I'm assuming that that nickname indicates he's got some pretty good quicks about him, right?
Well, I think he caught more jackrabbits when he was a kid than anybody else. So I think it's pretty, it kind of fits for a defensive back, being able to change directions really quick.
Dave, tell us on these mini camps, you just kind of mentioned, number one, I think fans would be interested about this. Players who do not live here, maybe are new here, do the Titans put them up when they're in for mini camp?
Absolutely. They absolutely do. Yes.
Can they be there? Will they be there all day long, meetings and things, weightlifting, things like that?
Cannot be there all day. There's a time limit on how long they can be in the building, depending on whether you're in phase one, phase two, or phase three.
Okay? Really?
Yes. But the longest time that you can be both in the building and on the field during these OTAs is 6 hours.
Interesting. Now, if players want to stay there and work out on their own afterwards, can they still do that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And absolutely. I'm assuming many will take advantage of that, I would guess.
Well, no, they absolutely do. I mean, yeah, this is 6 hours of supervised with the coaches. On their own, they can do whatever they want to.
All right, what now? Mini camp's over. Training camp starts, what, in about a month or so?
Training camp will start July the 27th. As I said, the rookies, there's a designated NFL rookie program that all clubs have to provide to their rookies, not only with the football part of it, but every day, you know, it's something with as far as financial management, going through it. They have a set program that's a three-week program that they have to complete and go through. Chick Ajayi is the player engagement person up there at the Titans. He's in charge of that. Each club has a department that's in charge of that. So the rookies are going through that right now. Vets are on their own. Most of them take time with their families now early on. Of course, they all have their workout programs that either they have their own or that are provided to them. And when I was coaching, all the years I was coaching in the league, both as a head coach and as an assistant head coach, you encourage these players to take some time off. Because once they get back and get into it, Doug, as you well know, 17 weeks is a grind. It's a real grind. So you want them to take some time first. But they've got to come back in condition, and most all of them do.
Dave, one of the things that has been kind of talked about in pro sports now, all of them actually, pretty much all of them, and I heard a report on this a couple of days ago, some folks talking about it, and then I read a little bit about it. Seems like every sport this year in particular, and really going back a couple of years, have had a lot of injuries to key players. Now, the emphasis on this was in the NBA, where you've had so many of the top players that are injured. And then they went into how almost every sport, pro sport I'm talking about now, has kind of faced a little of this in the last few years. And I've always wondered this, at some point, working out, strength training, running, and all those things, at some point, Dave, there's got to be where you get to doing too much. And we've seen it seemingly rises every year. Back when we were playing, almost everybody took the entire summer off. You'd go home and they'd send you a little card to go run your mile and a half and do your push-ups and do your setups and all that thing. Now, these things get to where they're pretty much 12 months out of the year workouts, players. And this has happened in college also. And I just wonder if part of that could be the fact that, how far can you continually push your body, get stronger? You get in better shape. There's got to be at some point, doesn't there, where there's too much of that?
Well, I mean, professional athletes, they know their bodies. And that's why a lot of these guys, work out on their own. You bring that up, back in the day when they would just leave. That's why we used to have 6 weeks of training camp. We would spend the first 2 weeks of training camp getting guys in condition. Getting guys in shape. Now they stay in condition all year long. But the pros, once you get into the National Football League, after your first year especially, you understand what it takes. And no, once they leave for this time, this is not the time where they're grinding their bodies down. Most of this time is now spent on flexibility and aerobic, ability. because you're going to have to be in aerobic conditioning, but they don't, this is not a grind time. And the professionals understand this, and you rookies, you have to teach them this. First of all, they don't understand what type of condition you have to be in to play a professional season. But then the other thing they need to learn is how to tailor for their body to get into that type of condition. And so, to me, it's come a long way, Doug. It really has, because I've been in the league long enough. As I said, remember, we would have 6 weeks of training camp, and the first 2 weeks were nothing but conditioning twice a day, because guys would come back not in shape for football.
So basically, you're saying you think my theory is a little bit short on facts, right?
Well, here's what happens, and I've heard some just recently, a seminar on this. When a top-notch player gets hurt, NBA, NFL, it brings a spotlight on it. But the numbers that they say, they're still exactly either the same, or even they were down last year in the National Football League because you didn't have OTAs and you didn't have preseason games.
Well, and a lot of this came from the NBA, where you just, as we're looking at the LeBron James, you can kind of go down the list, 6, 7, maybe 8 of the top players have missed significant playing time. Now we're seeing what James Harden, Durant was out for a while, Kyrie Irving. All right, let's move on. Titans new wide receiver group. We brought this up last week, of course, with Julio Jones coming in. It takes on a new perspective on that. I was asked by some folks just about it, and I thought I'd bring it up with you, Dave. Tell us about and we talked about the size, the possible size to put out on the field. Let's talk about that and how it will work in the NFL this year.
Yeah, well, clearly, Coach, and I'm glad you brought this up, because I mean, this is very apparent even when I'm standing out there watching this team practice this year, as far as to the size. And the size of the National Football League receivers has exponentially gotten bigger, as you well know, because the receivers have gotten bigger coming out of collegiate football. And that's always been, you and I were secondary coaches for a long time in our career. This is the challenge when you've got, you got a 5'9 or a 5'10 corner, and you've got a 6'2 or a 6'3 or 6'4 receiver that gets all the advantages down the field with the rules as far as pass interference. Okay. Let me just give you the order of how big these guys are. The Green Bay Packers, their whole receiving crew, okay, is 6'2 and a little over. All right. The Cincinnati Bengals, okay, they're right at 6'2 and over. The Denver Broncos, right under 6 foot. I mean 6'2. The Cowboys, right at that same level. The Chargers, okay, right at that same 6'2 plus level. And this is an average of all the receivers. The Tennessee Titans are number 6 in this group, 73.08 inches. If anybody can do the math, 72 inches, is 6 foot. So these receivers are getting bigger and bigger, Doug. They really are. And the Titans, with the addition of Julio Jones, Josh Reynolds, who will probably be the number 3 that they signed for the Rams, and then A.J. Brown, they've got a chance to line up 6'2", 6'3", plus across the board. And as I said, they are the 6th biggest as an aggregate group in the National Football League. And so the whole thing is just getting larger and larger. If you want to go to the smaller scale of it, the three teams at the bottom scale of this as far as size of receivers on a total number of receivers, the Seahawks are under 6 feet tall. The Houston Texans, okay, are under 6 feet tall. And the Buffalo Bills are under 6 feet tall. So those are the bottom three. But I just gave you the top 6 where they were 6'2 plus, all of them. And that's taken into account all the receivers that are right now, and most teams will suit up 5 or 6 during the regular season.
Well, height's one part of it, too. And the thing the Titans have now, certainly with the addition of Jones, they got some height there. They also got some physicalness. These guys are 215, 220-ish?
Yeah, 220. And, in the case of A.J. Brown, 230. I mean, and these guys, and you and I, when we do coach-to-coach, during the season and even now, we talk about combat catchers. Well, combat catch is one-on-ones downfield. And so when you have receivers this size, Doug, in the National Football League, a lot of times they don't have to be open downfield on vertical routes for the quarterback to throw it to them. If that defensive back's back is to the ball and it's a long vertical route and they've got one-on-one, they just put it up, because those combat catches, everything size-wise and rules-wise, are in the favor of these big, long, tall, physical receivers.
Dave, let's go to break talking about Wilson Bank and Trust. They pride themselves in saying they are Middle Tennessee's community bank. We've been with them several years now. From my perspective, they truly are Middle Tennessee's community bank.
Well, absolutely. We talk about the receivers from the Titans and across the league getting bigger and standing tall. Well, Wilson Bank and Trust stands tall in their communities. They stand tall with their service to their people. They are very, very – they're very – immersed in all of these communities that they are in. They're not only involved in your financial aspects of it, they are involved in things that you need personally and things that are good for the community. They are a community bank for this reason. Their focus is primarily not only on their customers' financial needs, but also on the needs of the community. Wilson Bank and Trust, the best at that.
28 locations, 9 Middle Tennessee counties. Your Middle Tennessee community bank is Wilson Bank and Trust. Had the opportunity to visit the Double Dog down in Hillsborough Village yesterday. A couple of good friends of mine, 3 of them. We all had lunch down there. Great place to go. 2 locations here in Nashville, over on Charlotte Pike. That's a little bit close to where Dave McGinnis lived, but the nearest to me, the one I go to, Hillsborough Village. 30-plus TVs. I was sitting there watching a little bit. The U.S. Open was going on yesterday. Had a few other things going on. Talking to some friends, having some great food. You could do the same thing. Again, that's Double Dogs Restaurant. Check out all their locations. They're up in Knoxville, up in Bowling Green, and in many of the collegiate towns around the Southeastern Conference. DoubleDogs.biz is the place to go. Dave, now what's going to happen? We know what's going to happen once the practice is over. We got this kind of dead period coming up, both college ball and pro ball. So we're going to be talking about things that are going on outside of actual on the field work on this. Let's talk a little bit about this, both areas of it. I'm going to get with you on the pros, and I'll talk about the collegiate end of it. Vaccinated versus non-vaccinated. How's the NFL handling this thing now?
Doug, they released a memo on Wednesday, said that the COVID-19 protocols will remain in place throughout the preseason with strict restrictions for unvaccinated players. Fully vaccinated players will have most restrictions removed, okay? That's a huge difference right there. And so they also gave details on what that would mean. And what this is going to mean is this: any player, here's the memo for you, any player who is not fully vaccinated will continue to be subject to daily testing, mask wearing in the team, including in the team facility, physical distancing, a quarantine if he has a high risk exposure to someone with COVID-19, so contact tracing, significant restrictions. Listen to this: when traveling, including required isolation in the team hotel and relegation to a separate team plane, a prohibition of meals with teammates, a prohibition on social media and marketing sponsorship activities, a ban on gathering with more than 3 other players away from the team facility, a requirement to wear personal protective equipment to visit any indoor bar or nightclub, more than 10 people in it, a ban on attending indoor concerts or other entertainment events, a 5-day delay between first reporting to training camp and participating fully in activities. Vaccinated players, Doug, will face none of those restrictions. They will be required to be tested once every 14 days. That's it.
All right. Going to get into the collegiate part of it and also the media part of it on this. But they essentially what the NFL has done, and this is what all you're going to see all the sports do, collegiate sports, universities also. They legally, they cannot force Dave McGinnis or Doug Matthews to get vaccinated. They
can't. Correct.
But what they can do, they can put restrictions on what you can do, and that's exactly what this is going to do. Why in the world would anyone not want to get vaccinated on this? Now, there are some exceptions on this. Obviously, if there's medical reasons why you can't, And a couple of there's a couple of areas where you're kind of grayish areas on this, but bottom line is this: what they're telling the players are, and I'm going to get into the college part of it here in just a second. Hey, if you're not vaccinated, you're going to have to jump through a lot of hoops just to be able to walk in the facility or walk into a game on that. Kind of interesting, Dave. I was reading this is ESPN who does. If you look at all the college games and pro games,
right,
they do more games than anybody else. All of their on-site people, if you're going to be on-site, you know, and if you now if you're not, if you're going to be a remote site, that's okay. If you're on-site, you have to be vaccinated, period, or you can't go, can't do it.
You're correct. I mean, those restrictions that I just read to you, I mean, that's a stark difference. And the National Football League has said if you have 85% of your players, of course, most all the staff is vaccinated, but 85% of your players vaccinated, well, then everybody, then it's herd immunity. Then everybody, it's just back to like it was before there were ever any restrictions. And so there's a stark difference. And as you said, that everybody has their own personal choice. Nobody is mandating anything, but they can mandate protocols to protect everybody else. And you're, and I like your analogy. If you're not vaccinated in the National Football League as a player, there are so many hoops you're going to have to jump through. I mean, you're going to have to get up and get tested at 6 o'clock every morning. You know, I mean, and that's even during your off week. You've got to come in. You've got to come in. I mean, say you win a game on Sunday and you get a victory Monday off and you don't have to be back in the facility until Wednesday. Not if you're not vaccinated. You got to go up there Monday and Tuesday, 6 o'clock in the morning, to get tested. A lot of hoops, Doug. So there's a lot of advantages to being vaccinated.
Well, how about when you're on the road being isolated into the team hotel? I mean,
all of those things that I just read you, I mean, to me, and again, as I say, everybody's got their own personal reasons. And that's as you said, you can't cross over that line. But I know myself personally, if I had a choice, and I did, I mean, I'm fully vaccinated, so I'm good. But if I see those two things, I look at the list of things you can do if you're vaccinated and the things you cannot do if you're not vaccinated, it doesn't take much for me to go get vaccinated.
Well, I have some friends who have decided not to. I have some distance, not immediate. I have some distant family members who have decided not to. There's always going to be that question now about at what age do you have your children vaccinated? Sure. So there's a, you know, these aren't, maybe sounds kind of easy, I guess, when you look at it from your perspective, but otherwise not so much. Those are difficult decisions sometimes. All right. I got asked this question to ask you, Dave, and I'm going to kind of expand it just a little bit.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson, NFL. Not much being said about that right now. Kind of interesting to me that there's not hardly anything being said about that anywhere. What do you think, this personal opinion from your standpoint, his chances are of playing at all this year?
Well, first of all, here's what.
Hey, by the way, I'm not talking about his not wanting to play with the Texans. I'm talking about his off field problems.
Well, the first thing that should happen is the NFL, they should let the Texans and Deshaun Watson know whether he'll be on paid leave if these cases aren't settled. That's the commissioner's exempt list. And it's been nearly 3 months since the first of 22 lawsuits were filed against him. And so the NFL has had a fair chance to go through all of this. And so what it means is the league has broad discretion on this, and the commissioner, you put him on the commissioner exempt list, even in the absence of any formal criminal charges, Doug, then what it does is, it allows him to be paid leave. Now, paid leave makes a big, big difference, because what that does, if Watson believes he'll be on paid leave, he'll definitely report for training camp. Okay, that results in him receiving his full $10 million for 2021. If the Texans believe he'll be on paid leave, they possibly could trade him now for whatever they can get and shifting the $10 million to another team. If the Texans and Watson don't know he'll be placed on paid leave, they could trade, you know, Watson for considerably more. So there's the league needs to let them know what's going to happen.
Gut feeling. You think the Texans will trade him if they can?
I think, if the commissioner makes a decision to put him on paid leave, my gut feeling is that they would trade him, because then his market would be bigger.
Interesting. That has to happen by what time, Dave, as we look at the calendar?
Well, it has to happen. It has to happen by the time training camp starts. July.
I was going to say it has to come about before then, doesn't it? All right, we're going to take our last break, come back. We're going to finish up with just a few thoughts on what's going on in the NFL and college football. You had heating and air problems. Well, I have, and let me tell you who I have gone with in when I needed to replace a couple of times since I've owned a couple of homes I own. Rheem. There's a pro partner near you for Rheem, called a Rheem Pro Partner. And what they have is they have the very best when it comes into equipment, both heating and air. Long-time relationship with them. I know from my working with them, any type of a problem that I had, which was very, very few, Rheem was here to take care of it. The Rheem Pro Partners. There's one near you. R-H-E-E-M, Rheem Pro Partner at Rheem.com. One thing Dave and I were going to take a look at, had planned to take a look at, was the early look at the 2022 college quarterback draft coming out. Never too early to do that, but kind of did a little switch on this. Dave, let's talk about quarterback situation. We mentioned Deshaun Watson down there. I listen and read and watch with interest on the Aaron Rodgers situation, but it got me thinking about how difficult it is to have back-to-back quarterbacks. And you were in the league for so many years. Has there been any team that have had two quarterbacks back-to-back for longevity? I'm not talking about just ability. Two Hall of Fame quarterbacks like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, which, what, well over 20 years, I'm guessing, right, back-to-back?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first that comes to mind, and not this longevity-wise, but two Hall of Famers, is Montana and Steve Young. You know, they're at the 49ers. And then I would put, if he would have kept playing, you know, Andrew Luck coming on the heels of Peyton Manning. They're at Indy. I mean, those are two – that's two big-time quarterbacks back-to-back. But you're right. I mean, the Green Bay Packers, you know, for those two back-to-back in those type of years, no. I mean, it's impressive, you know. And, of course, you know, we all know the story about, you know, how Aaron Rodgers sat in the green room for a long time on draft day and then was taken when Brett Favre was still there, sat for quite a while, you know, with Brett Favre playing, and then, you know, has a Hall of Fame career himself. So I would think longevity-wise, especially in today's National Football League, the last 20 years, I think that's the longest tenure, Doug.
Yeah, I don't think close. Of course, no doubt in the Montana Steve Young deal. But Steve Young, if folks can remember back that far, were around then. He was drafted, played in the USFL. He really only played, and then he sat behind Montana for a couple of years. He really was only a starting quarterback for San Francisco. What, four, maybe five, maybe 6 years?
I think it was six. I think it was 6 years. And then plus, I mean, he retired because of concussions. If you remember correctly, he didn't retire. He didn't retire because of anything physical. Yeah,
He also won a world championship, and of course Luck didn't get that far. But obviously the Packers with Favre won a world championship also up there, as did Aaron Rodgers. So that's kind of interesting on that. I ask you about Deshaun Watson, and I know this is all guesswork, but let's close with this. Aaron Rodgers is going to be with Green Bay when it's all said and done this year?
I think so. Yes. You know, I think so, because there's never been anything out of Green Bay that says they don't want him. You know,
and he is a complicated fellow though, right?
Well, I heard that they brought that back up. From a man Teddy when he was the GM there. But anyway, that's still an interesting situation, Doug. It's ongoing.
Out of time. Thanks so much, my friend. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
Thank you, Doug.
For Dave McGinnis, Farm Bureau Health Plans. Certainly Ryan Albanese for producing. Have a great weekend. Father's Day coming up tomorrow. As an old buddy of mine said, you know, the only difference between Father's Day and Mother's Day is you don't have to spend as much money on Father's Day. We'll see you next Saturday right here on Coast to Coast.